buddy. Thanks.
Right. Hi, everybody. It's so good to be here. I'm a huge fan of Arcadia Publishing, which is what Galen John's new book is published under. I don't know if you're familiar with this publishing company, but they really specialize in history, and they do various books, or I think for all 50 states. And it just in Michigan alone, there must be, oh my goodness, maybe 100, 200, 300 different books on Detroit, books on all aspects of Ann Arbor and Ypsilanti. And as soon as I saw that this book was coming out, iconic restaurants of Ann Arbor, immediately reached out to Gail and John to, first of all, get them on my morning show, and then to book this event at the library, because I knew it was going to have a lot of interest. And that these images, once you get your own copy of the book, will just take you back. If you're a townie, if you grew up here, if you went to school here and went to some of these places, some are still with us, many aren't, and you'll ooh and ah at these great, great images. For me, my oohs and ahs were the loudest for the late, great Drake's Restaurant. I don't know how many of you remember Drake's on North University, but it was a very cool and very romantic place to hang out with my first serious girlfriend back in the day. Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us. This is a very casual affair. Feel free to raise your hands during the proceedings. We'll try to save most of your questions until the end. But if there's just something that you absolutely want to chime in about, please feel free to do so. And please welcome the authors of this incredible book, Iconic Restaurants of Ann Arbor, John Milan and Gail Offen, to the Ann Arbor District Library. Folks, Gail, John.
Everyone for coming out. Oh, there we go. Thank you so much for coming out. The last time we appeared in Ann Arbor, it was pouring rain at Nicola's, so we're glad the weather held out. But thank you so much for coming out for a book we feel really, really passionate about. And as Martin said, he was talking about Drake's. I'm obviously wearing a Drake's t-shirt, but this is what started the whole reason for doing the book. My niece Rachel gave me the shirt, and I was a huge fan of Drake's growing up. My uncle used to take me there for fresh limeades, and I was looking for a book on Drake's, and I realized there wasn't a book on any kind of Ann Arbor restaurants at all, which a town that is so rich with restaurants and memories, how can there not be a book? I must write this book with John. John and I co-wrote a book about Grand River Avenue, which is also by Arcadia Publishing. And that was all about taking a road trip on Grand River, because Grand River goes from Detroit, at the Detroit Athletic Club. It starts there, it goes west all the way through the state and ends up in Muskegon. And if you take a ferry across Lake Michigan to Milwaukee, you can continue all the way to Yellowstone. It's Michigan's Route 66, but very few people travel it. So that was a little plug for that book.
We have some here too.
Yeah. Yes, we have some here for sale too. But John is a historian and has done a book also on Michigan Avenue, and he's a jazz expert. He's an expert on Detroit jazz from the 1920s. He has a book on that as well. I'm a writer in an advertising agency, but this is our true love, food and history. We merge them together, and we feel very, very passionate about it. So we're going to go through the book. What we usually do is hand out, we forgot our index cards, because we love people to write down their favorite food memories. You know, it's interesting. Some of your greatest memories are formed in restaurants and bars, especially if you're here, for example, through college. You meet your friends, your lifelong friends. Some people meet their spouses there. And so these are a source of great memories. And someone once asked me, what do you consider an iconic restaurant? And I say, it's when you tell someone about a restaurant, you ask someone about a restaurant, and they smile and nod, and then they tell you a story about it.
Yeah.
That's really what makes it iconic. So we're hoping you're going to share some of your favorite food memories and stories with us as well tonight. So the book is divided into a bunch of chapters, but we start out with the legendary and long forgotten. And these are ones that none of you, I swear, are old enough to remember, but have a really interesting history. And John did a lot of research on those, and he was able to find, these are actually some of the cool little advertising from them. So John's going to tell you about that. And then we're also going to talk about, and we're going to tell you about ones that are no longer here that you guys probably have some great memories. And then we're going to also share ones that are still around and we can all still go to.
Okay, great. Yeah, obviously you saw the Metzger's doily there. No, it was a coaster there, yeah. But before most of us were born, there were a lot of restaurants in houses, just like Rajarani is now. I think it's actually called Savino, right? But this is called the Fawcett House, and it was at the corner of Huron and Division. And right next to it was the Haunted Tavern, which was in an 1850s mansion. If you go there now, you'll see this big skyscraper. So obviously they're not around anymore. But it was very common to have restaurants in these old mansions that had, you know, been built up right around the campus. Because, of course, at that time, the school was much smaller. I'm supposed to point it that way. Everybody knows, I think, I want to go back to Michigan, right? Yeah. Back to Joe's in the Orient, back to some of the money I spent. Joe's was a popular hangout, and so was the Orient. Neither of them are around anymore. They go back to the turn of the century. But if you're really looking carefully and you go to the corner of Ann and 4th Street, in the doorway of what is now Kaleidoscope, you will see the mosaic from the entranceway to Joe's, still there. This was actually called the Catalpa Hotel at the time, and Joe's was right in the lobby there. So if you go there, don't ask Jeff for a drink or anything. He'll just give you a book, I'm sure.
Oh, and this is just, and this actually was around up until the 70s, the Betsy Ross Shop. You can see a sign there that says candy. It was a place that had ice cream and candy in the Nichols Arcade. This was just a cheap excuse for me to put in a picture of the Nichols Arcade during the 30s. And you'll also see a sign for the arcade cafeteria that was there. The Nichols Arcade to us is one of the souls of Ann Arbor.
Oh, yeah.
It still is a place that really distinguishes Ann Arbor.
How many of you remember the Betsy Ross? Okay,
oh, wow.
Quite a few of you. As Gail said, the arcade restaurant was in there too. The only original tenant of the arcade, or one of the original tenants, is, does anybody know what it is?
Caravan.
The Caravan Shop, which was there about 1929, I think. Yeah, well, yeah, but you know. But one of the things that Gail and I found out by researching this was that the arcade cafeteria, you see the sign there, it looks like a prop from Elmer Gantry or something. And they were both in the arcade, and they used a kitchen that was the garage. It functioned as the garage of the Shant. And how many people are familiar with the Shant?
What a word, the Shant.
It's on the William Street.
Yeah. It's very foreboding. It looks like a murder mystery is going to happen.
The Delta Kappa Epsilon House was built in 1878 by William Jenney, who is considered the father of the American skyscraper. Not for that, of course, but for the Mutual Insurance Building in Chicago. But at any rate, it's still there. It is still a mysterious building, but that was where the kitchen would be set up behind that. Now, I don't know if anybody knows this, but Division Street was the dividing line where you could get beer and wine. You couldn't get it any closer to the university than that. That was the law. Because there had been some what they call shenanigans up until the point they said
no
more beer and wine there. Division Street is the limit. And it was that way for many years. And when Prohibition came along, of course, you couldn't get beer and wine anywhere as far as the police knew. And this song, which came out in 1920 called Ann Arbor Will Never Be the Same, which was from one of the Michigan Opera shows, it mentioned so many of the restaurants and it talks about how you're going to get your kicks at these restaurants now that you can't get alcohol. So instead of a bourbon dandy, you'll try to get a jag and a bag of candy and cut loose at the Betsy Ross and all kinds of, it mentions all the great restaurants. When Prohibition was finally repealed, Dixie Barbecue opened, and it says that it's the closest you can get to the university to get beer and wine. Now, the Dixie Barbecue is still a barbecue place, and it's called the Blue Tractor. So
sure.
One of the things Gail and I discovered was that a lot of these restaurants, they continue with a different name, with a different function, you know, a different, you know, which way are we going here?
Oh, no, I wanted you to do this
next, okay.
Because you're sort of on a thing.
And in a nod to that, when they put the CVS in on State Street, you guys all know where that is, right?
Oh, yeah.
The people who put it together, they decided they were going to replicate the sign of the old nightclub that was there in the 20s and 30s called the Ritz Dine and Dance. And you can see, you don't usually see CVS signs shaped like that with that Art Deco motif.
It's ye old CVS.
Ye old CVS.
It's
a faux front. It used to have a very old 19th century house behind it. And when CVS moved in, unfortunately, they tore the house down, but they left the facade there and they recreated the Ritz Dine and Dance.
This is a great thing to point out to people. This is like gives you a little secret tip to point out to people when you take them on tours of Ann Arbor. So now we're going to go through some other restaurants of a more recent vintage. We put this in the book because it's such a great colorful menu. This was on Main Street. This was called La Seine, and it was a very fancy French restaurant, and it only lasted for a year, but there were 9 owners that invested $200,000 in it back then, which was incredible. It had Limoges china and crystal. And it's noted for having Ruth Reichel, who is the editor. I hope I'm pronouncing your name right. She's a U of M graduate, and she was the editor of Gourmet when, unfortunately, it went out of business. She was also the New York Times food critic for many years. Yeah. She worked there. She made $1 an hour, but she'd make $26 a day in tips. And I know my young friends here don't think that's a lot of money, but in 1966 it was like a lot of money, and it was you couldn't have a meal there for under three hours. So, I think a restaurant like this would be successful today, but back then people were not ready for La Seine.
But of course, Gail always usually points out the fact that none of those 9 people had any experience
in the restaurant.
The restaurant
and
business.
They actually wrote a book about it called How to Grill a Gourmet, which is a very funny book. So when we were doing this book, there were 3 restaurants people would always ask us about. They'd say, are you putting in Drake's? Are you putting in the Wiffle Tree, which we'll get to? And are you putting in the Pretzel Bell? The Pretzel Bell to us is one of the most iconic restaurants ever to be in Ann Arbor. And here John is going to tell you a little bit about some of the traditions in the Pretzel Bell with the bell and the... John actually got that bell on eBay.
No, actually, I got it at an antique store here in town.
Well, close enough.
But I can even put in a plug for the Antelope. Carl Lagler's... Anyway, the Pretzel Bell opened with the repeal of Prohibition. And, of course, they were well known for being a drinking establishment, and it was a rite of passage. You'd go in there, and the story was you would drink 21 beers on your 21st birthday. And after they called the ambulance, they would give you a cardboard pretzel.
Cardboard pretzel.
And a cardboard pretzel with a bell on it. And this here bell that Gail referenced, it's actually, it says Pretzel Bell, Happy New Year, 1934 to 35. So that was actually given out the first year they were open for New Year's Eve. And you were going to ring that. And it has a little bottle opener, if you noticed, on the...
So many people celebrated things at the Pretzel Bell. And one of the interesting things we found out was this guy, Donald Glazer, who was a professor of physics at U of M, he actually went on to win a Nobel Prize in physics for something called the bubble chamber in 1960. And the bubble chamber is something about subatomic particles being visible along a side like of a glass of something. And it is said, and I want to believe this, that he got the idea for this bubble chamber by watching the beer, a glass of beer, and watching the bubbles go down the side of the beer. And he went, bubble chamber, won a Nobel Prize. Thank you, Pretzel Bell. I love that story. Doesn't he look industrious?
I think they were going down the glass after the 21 beers, though.
Something was going down. And just for reference, we do what we call the faux Pretzel Bell, which opened up, as you know, at the corner of Liberty and Main. And basically what happened was these people just bought a bunch of stuff on eBay and opened it up. They didn't even bother to ask. They didn't even bother to ask the owners. They just opened it up themselves. And it's kind of sad because they didn't consult the original owners. It replaced one of my favorite restaurants when I was going to school here, the Parthenon. Cheap Greek food, wonderful ambiance, and it was just such a great hangout. A former, it was the Cunninghams, actually, way back in the day. Drake's. I could spend the next half hour talking with Martin about Drake's. It started this whole book. There's nothing like Drake's. It was a moment in time that I'm so glad we all got to experience, those of us that got to experience.
How many got to experience Drake? Almost
everybody.
That's
pretty good. Famous for its limeade, famous for writing your order on that little pad with a pencil. Do you remember that? It's incredible teas. I love the name of the people who own Drake's, Truman and Mildred Tibbles. You can't make up names like that. And the comfort food was incredible. You don't get food like that anymore. They would make cream cheese and olive sandwiches. They were, pardon? cucumber sandwiches, and also famous for their grilled pecan rolls, if people remember that. Incredible teas you've never heard of, candy, and it was just, and fresh limeade, of course, which was wonderful. Wow. And you could walk into, it didn't close till 93. You could walk in there and it looked exactly like it did back in the 20s when my mother used to study there when she went to U of M. I really like to think this is her smoking in a booth there. She looks a little bit like her. And it's just, in our book, we have a reproduction of a menu as well. And it just was
which you found on eBay.
Which I found on eBay. But it was a wonderful place in time.
When did it first open?
1928. It was actually something of the same kind before that, though.
And replaced by a Brugger's Baby.
Well, yeah.
We call that a Shonda, for those who understand that word. Thank you. Thank you for laughing at a Shonda. And here's another place, of course, if you guys remember the Wiffle Tree. We get a lot of questions when we do presentations about the Wiffle Tree. There's something about the Wiffle Tree that really stuck with people. It's a very, very popular restaurant, famous for its oysters Rockefeller. They were the first people to do Irish coffee in a big way. They would go through 4 cases of Irish whiskey a week. Famous for their Wiffle Tree fries, their ribs. And the Wiffle Tree, of course, it's a farm implement. It was all barn wood on the inside. And it sadly, as we know, burned down one night. And he tried to start some other restaurants, but it was never really the same. And another story the owner told me was they used to have lines on the weekend that were so long that sometimes the lines would go down the block and merge with the line that were trying to get into the old German. The lines would meet up with people. So that was a real wonderful place. That was down on Huron Street.
Oh, I miss that place.
The only place I know of that still has lines like that is Knight's, the original Knight's. You go in there on a Saturday night and you can't get even near the building.
Right.
The old Del Rio was a favorite of many people's. It was opened by Rick Burgess and Ernie Harburg. I'm sorry, I could think of his father's name. His father was a famous songwriter, Yip Harburg, who wrote the songs for The Wizard of Oz. He wrote Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? A lot of great things.
You know, the Del Rio was a real Ann Arbor place because it was run like a co-op. It was run like a commune, really. Basically, all the employees were in charge of making every decision collectively. And it is such an Ann Arbor thing. And a lot of members of the Weather Underground and the SDS would meet there. All kinds of, everybody from Patti Smith would hang out there. And it was, they were famous for their thing called the Det Burger. Did anybody have one of those? A hamburger steamed in beer. Sarah Moulton of the Food Network, she was a U of M graduate. She was a chef there. And she has these great stories about it. Sometimes nothing would get done because they couldn't agree on anything. Even hiring people, they all had to agree. And I just love that. To me, that's a real Ann Arbor place that's lost to time.
You know, I would also mention that Harburg and Burgess decided they were going to open a music establishment, and they opened the Earl right across the street, which kind of happens to be right in the window there, so that Rick Burgess could play the piano there. And of course, that's still around, even though they're past.
This is, I don't know if any of you know Susan Weinberg. Unknown. She's one of the people that helped us with the book. She and her husband Lars met there, and they celebrated their anniversary there every year. Now they had to find somewhere else to celebrate.
Well.
Two other favorites, old school favorites, were Steve's Lunch on South U, if any of you remember that. It was a little place with Korean food. You'd sit on stools and spin around. We like that picture because a dog is looking at something that says steak dinner. And Kana, which went over by Huron when it was originally there up on the hill by Omega Pizza. We really try to get an Omega. In this book, the format of this book is you have to get the rights to the pictures. And if there's restaurants missing, we apologize, but we couldn't get the rights to the pictures. Omega Pizza, if anybody lived up on the hill, a good greasy pizza was right next to Kana. And here are some other favorites we love to talk about. One of them is Maud's on 4th Avenue. Remember Maud's? And one of the things I love on the menu is something called the martini salad, which consisted of a pitcher of martinis and some cut-up vegetables. That's, ladies and gentlemen, that's how you get your vegetables, your daily requirement of vegetables. You have a martini salad. I think we should continue this tradition. But what's interesting about Maud's is All the principals in Zingerman's are all met there. They all worked there. They were dishwashers. They were waiters. Ari, Paul, Maggie, Frank, all those people. They went on from Maud's to start Zingerman's. They all met there. We found that a lot. People would meet at certain restaurants, and then they'd go on to start their own. We love that tradition. A couple other old favorites, the Crack Crab up there, as you see. Great seafood on paper plates. And I love the story of why the sign is like that. They bought a bar that played music, and they were too cheap to change the sign, so they just slapped a crab up there. And that's great. And Curtis's Chicken in the Rough, does anybody remember that on Main Street? It was part of a franchise that had 235 restaurants across the country. Wonderful broasted chicken with shoestring fries served with honey and biscuits. And it's interesting to note there is only one surviving Curtis's Chicken in the Rough. And it's in Michigan, ladies and gentlemen. It's in Port Huron, Michigan, in a place called the Crystal Bar, a bar from the 40s. It is worth the trip to go up to Port Huron and get Chicken in the Rough. It's as good as you remember. Do the road trip. Go to the Crystal Bar, Crystal Palms Bar, and get some Chicken in the Rough.
And I just want to say that Gail's memory of going to the Cracked Crab and to Curtis's with her Uncle Mort were very much part of the beginning of our project because she had such fond memories of that. And she dedicated the book to her uncle.
He took me to all these places.
Yeah. Ah, you go, the Lamplighter. How many remember the Lamplighter? All right, let's get some square pizza.
U of M used to have their basketball training table there.
That's right.
Go ahead.
And Gerald Ford wanted to go there after, you know, of course he went there as a student most likely or later, but when he became president, they didn't want him to be there. They didn't want the Secret Service in there. They didn't want to displace all the regular customers. So they said, no, the president can't come in here.
But their wonderful square pizza with the sesame seeds, the Greek pizza, what a place that was. That was wonderful. Here's a couple other old favorites, particularly of mine. You know, we wrote this book to appeal to many generations because we all went, the people that went to U of M went to at different times. A lot of my memories are from the 70s, but we even put in things from the 80s and 90s. But this is, to me, one of the great bars, Mr. Flood's Party. Famous Allen Ginsberg read poetry there. Jimi Hendrix came in there and performed. It's also famous, there was a porn star named
John Leslie.
John Leslie, who was a bartender there, a very famous porn star. It was just a real hangout. It had Tiffany lamps. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it was famous for having Tiffany lamps, a great ambiance. And Bicycle Jim's was another big favorite on South. You remember Bicycle Jim's from there? And interesting enough, Frank Carollo, who's from the Zingerman's, worked there. He used to work the lunch shift, and he'd go and make those fried mushrooms we all remember, and then he'd go to class, and people would come over and sniff him because he smelled so good. He smelled like fried food, and they'd come over, and then he'd run back to class. That was a real hangout, Bicycle Jim's. Their hot damn sandwich, their Yosemite Sam sandwich.
Ah, how many remember Bimbo's? All right, Bimbo's was actually the first place I was ever hired to play the piano. I got called from a guy named Rich Petershagen and said, can you come out and play with the group tonight? You know, it was all those old Dixielanders. Of course, that was the place where you'd roll up your sleeve and put a garter on there and you'd wear striped shirts. And it was started by a guy named Matt Chudik, who called himself the happy, what was his
name? Yugoslav.
Happy Yugoslav, yeah, I was gonna say the happy Czech. The happy Yugoslav. His idea was there was going to be music, peanut shells on the floor, and there was food, pizza, etc. And he thought, boy, that's really taken off. So he opened another one on Washtenaw. How many remember Bimbo's on the Hill? All right. And Bimbo's on the Hill is now a place called Paisano's.
Yeah.
And just to give you an idea about this long line of restaurants and restaurant owners, Paisano's is owned by the people that used to own the Red Bull. So there's just this whole family.
The peanut shells were unfortunately one of the reasons Bimbo's closed. The health department said enough is enough. There were rats and cockroaches eating these peanut shells. But the music went on.
And if you're still hungry.
Here's a couple of other favorites of ours. Because John's wearing his Shaky Jake shirt. But
I still do if I see him.
We break for Jake. We all remember the beloved bagel factory on South U replaced by some dumb high-rise. And, of course, for its Fraggles. They started the Fraggle. You know, it's not enough to deep fry a bagel, but you have to roll it in cinnamon sugar, too. It's delicious. I know Barry's Bagels, I think, here continues that tradition. And DeLong's Barbecue Pit, you know, we really tried to find a lot of African-American restaurants to put in this book, because there is a history in Ann Arbor of some interesting African-American restaurants. Unfortunately, again, because of our format, we weren't able to find the pictures that we needed to put in there. So we mentioned some of them, but we looked through everything and we weren't able to find pictures. One we did want to put in was the 37-year-long run of DeLong's Barbecue Pit. I don't know if any of you ever had a hot trout sandwich delivered. They used to deliver late at night, great barbecue. And are any of you on the Ann Arbor Townies site? Because I think it's an incredible Facebook page. It's called Ann Arbor Townies. It's all Ann Arbor memories. And apparently he's still making his barbecue sauce and selling it to people. I do love the fact that once it closed, it was very briefly a vegetarian Indian restaurant. It's like some kind of weird karma, some kind of weird reverse karma that it was that. I'm not sure what, I think it's a teriyaki place now, teriyaki time maybe. But anyway, it was a real iconic place, DeLong's. And up on the left, you know, on Packard, this has been a variety of things. I wanted to ask if anybody remembers Lucky Jim's Fish and Chips. That's really a long way ago. But Kingsley Amis, the famous author, his ex-wife, came over from England and ran a place called Lucky Jim's Fish and Chip, a real British fish and chips place where you'd roll it up in newspaper. And for a while, it was China on the Run that served Hawaiian food. Some of you might have remembered that because it was also a carry town. And also, John, the waterfall.
How many remember Cale's Waterfall?
No.
Now, that's going back a ways. Jimmy Cale's opened that. He designed it himself. He wanted it to look like a spaceship on the outside, and it did. And on the inside, it looked like a cave. It looked like something from a set from the Flintstones. You see the stalactites.
This was Szechuan West afterwards,
if
you guys remember
Szechuan
that
West.
On Stadium.
Right, right. Jimmy Cale's owned this place. It had live music. He also owned a place called Cale's Pier 23 in Whitmore Lake, which is now the Whitmore Lake Tavern.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Cale's is 102 and is still alive in Florida.
We found some great, you know, this has been, the greatest part of this book has been meeting these owners and having these stories. We talked to somebody from the Miller family. Remember Miller's Ice Cream? That's in the book as well. The guy who started Miller, Mr. Miller, the farmer, ate ice cream every day of his life, and he lived to 101. Another, put that up with the martini salad, eat ice cream every day.
Unlike the guy who invented strychnine.
We have the Rubiot, if any of you can remember from the 60s. That was one of the first gourmet places in Ann Arbor. It had exotic things like sukiyaki and Chateaubriand. And it was started by this guy named Greg Fennerly, who went on to do a lot of different restaurants. But another interesting fact we learned about the Rubiot, it was the first place in Ann Arbor to serve wine by the glass. Greg actually had to go up to the state capitol and petition them to let him serve wine by the glass. At the time, you could only buy it by the bottle. And also the Rubiot's famous because it turned into a dance club, and it would have what they called gay night, gay dance night, and Madonna used to, she used to hang out at the Rubiot all the time and dance. We have a lot of Madonna stories. She also worked at Dooley's, and she would tell people, I'm going to be famous someday, so you better be nice to me. How many times have people said that? This time it was actually right, but she actually worked in quite a few places around Ann Arbor. One of the other places you may remember that Greg owned, because he was a real raconteur, the Oyster Bar and Spaghetti Machine there on, and they'd have a machine right there in the restaurant that would make pasta. But one of the interesting things over there is he actually patented a one-handed spaghetti fork. Did anybody buy one of these? Because I'd love to find one.
Yeah.
And he made a patent so you could eat spaghetti with one hand. And there's the drawing for it right there. So he was a real character in the Ann Arbor dining scene. And then we wanted to throw in some of the natural food places because, again, that's very Ann Arbor. How many of you remember Indian Summer there on the Diag with their great pizza? And, of course, Eden's Grocery and Deli on Maynard, they had a version of the chapati. Obviously, they went on to start the Eden Food Company, but this is where the deli was. And up there, as you can see where Seva started, it was called Soybean Cellars. Do you guys remember Soybean Cellars? And also Wazoo Records was in there. And that's on Liberty here, where it's the new home of Jerusalem Garden, where we ate tonight. And what a wonderful place Jerusalem Garden is. I just want to put in a plug for them. Family owned, you know, they used to be around the corner in that little place, but now they're where Seva used to be. And he's just a great guy, Ali, and he makes the most incredible hummus. And it's a great place. And as you know, Seva is out over by Nicola's, and that's doing well as well. So the next chapter of this is called Still Here and Going Strong. So those are places that are no longer there. But these are places that are old and are still going strong, and we can go and visit them, and we feel very lucky about that.
And this is a milestone. The old town, Some people may or may not know this, but it is the oldest establishment in Michigan that still has an eating and drinking establishment in that building simultaneously since the 1890s.
It's truly the old town.
And looking at the old picture, it looks like you wouldn't even want to walk in there. But today, it's a very calm and restful place to get some really, really good.
It started out as a bar for factory workers. It opened early, so the third shift would get out at like 6 in the morning, and they'd have a bar to head to. So it used to open really early. And what's also interesting about it, it's a family-run place. They built all the stuff inside the bar. They built all the booths, all the tables. The family built it themselves. And it's to us, one of the last really great old hangouts in Ann Arbor. The Fleetwood, what would Ann Arbor be without the Fleetwood, the 24-hour? You know probably a lot about that, the hippie hash. John mentioned earlier about closing down for people. We love the fact that the Fleetwood would not close down for either Guy Fieri or President Obama. Both of them wanted them to close down for the day so they could visit, and they said, nah. So
I have a feeling a lot of the restaurants wouldn't close down for the president now. But.
Well, no political commentary. This is what actually used to be called the Dagwood Diner. That's why we put the matchbook in there.
Dominic's. How many people go to Dominic's?
We love the schedule for Dominic's. They open up the week. They open up the week after spring break, U of M spring break, and they close after the last home game of U of M. So it's a very limited thing, but. One of the things I love about Dominic's, it had mason jars before mason jars were trendy, but there's something about hanging out at Dominic's where hanging out with your friends, this to us really represents the best of iconic Ann Arbor restaurants, and it's a gathering place for people and for students and for great memories. And there's something, we have a little tip for you, there's something fascinating upstairs at Dominic's that very few people know about.
We met the owner, who is the son of the original owner, and he told us that they rescued these etched glass windows from the Capitol, from the state Capitol, which was built in the 1870s in Lansing, obviously.
They were throwing them out.
And because the weight of the structure was jeopardizing the fact that they were going to break, basically. So they rescued the windows and they installed them all upstairs. So if you're ever in there, you can see these wonderful windows. I think they lost one because somebody got drunk and threw a mug through one, but for the most part, they're still there.
They're very, very cool.
Yeah.
Go up there. Well, when they open up again, go up there and check them out.
Yeah, wait till the spring.
this is one of my favorite college memories was the Blind Pig. It was does anybody remember the basement of the Blind Pig, the smoky, cavernous Blind Pig, where some of the great blues and jazz artists would appear, Coco Taylor, Boogie Woogie Red. And you sit down in the basement, and the incredible food that would come out of that kitchen, we talked to the woman who used to be the chef there, they never had a kitchen. All they had was a hot plate and a toaster oven. But they would have these incredible, a lot of people had their very first like espressos and cappuccinos, a very European bistro, and they make these incredible soups and food on a hot plate and a toaster oven, just like in a dorm room. And the level, it was shocking. And the woman that used to be the chef, Monique Deschaine, went on to start Al Dente Pasta, which is located in Whitmore Lake, but maybe a lot of you are familiar and buy Al Dente Pasta. And so she's an incredible woman, so we had to put that in there. And also, we put in their Nirvana thing because they actually said the Blind Pig was their very favorite place to play in all of America. So that's kind of a
Some of that artwork is amazing, too, from the Blind Pig. Chris Frayn was the guy who did that. And his brother was the guy who started Commander Cody.
Yeah, we have a couple of the other artwork in there, so that was a really iconic thing. Okay, I could talk, just like I could talk for an hour about Drake's, I'm in love with Le Dog. I'm in love with the owners of Le Dog. I'm in love with everything about Le Dog. Jules Van Dyke Dobosch, his wife, beautiful wife, Ika down there, and their son who's continuing to run the business. You guys, this is a treasure of Ann Arbor. Now, you know, it used to be on Liberty. They finally closed that location because they had to schlep the soup uptown. There's no kitchen in this location. This was an old garage that became a caramel corn stand that became Le Dog. They're over on Main Street. They're set back inside of that office building. They're only open for breakfast and lunch. Or not breakfast, they're open for lunch. But they're one of the true artists of cuisine in Ann Arbor. They make everything from scratch. Did any of you get the chance to have the cassoulet they had a couple weeks ago? Jules makes it once a year. He bones 120 ducks. That's what he starts with. And everything is done by hand. And he's so funny. You know, I love to tell that story of why they don't serve pop there. In the 80s, during the art fair, he was supposed to get a delivery of pop, and they didn't want to deliver it during the art fair because it was too crowded. And he said, well, the hell with you. He threw all his pop equipment out in the street, hasn't served pop since, proudly has a sign that says, no pop ever. And he's so old school. I love it. No social media. You cannot have a cell phone, my God. If you don't have a cell phone, don't talk on a cell phone when you're ordering. He says, keep your tweezers off my plate. He hates foodies who take pictures. He's just a wonderful chef, a wonderful person. And please, Le Dog.
Everybody knows this place.
Yeah, speaking of eccentric characters, I think you all know about Crazy Jim's. Now, it has moved. We showed the old location and the new location. But as you know, you have to know how to order a Crazy Jim's, or you're really, you can tell the out-of-towners that don't know the precise order of...
The instructions are right here.
Yes.
Listen to the questions. Answer just the questions.
Has anybody ever ordered wrong at Blimpie Burger and suffered the results?
Suffered trauma. I would tell you, the person that introduced me to Blimpie was John Sinclair. So that is really going, you know, with the right guy. You know?
Yeah. Munchies. Yeah. And speaking of the munchies, Pizza Bob's, which is to us still a wonderful place, it's still around, it's family owned. It was obviously started by a guy named Pizza Bob's, but we put that in here to show you some of the other locations, if you remember. I love the Pizza Bob's uptown was literally two doors down from regular Pizza Bob's.
At a higher elevation.
And then on Church Street, they also had Pizza Bob's Midtown Cafe for a while. They had the Garbage Pit. I worked at Pizza Bob's in college. And I was famous for making my triple fudge milkshakes for stoners. I was, I probably could still make one if I walked in there. Their chapati to me is another totally archetypal Ann Arbor food. I could sit and drink that chapati sauce, like I could do it like a shot, because I think it's one of the most wonderful things. That's kind of a place where when people come from out of town, like on a game day, they will go to places like Crazy Jim's. They will go to places like Pizza Bob's because it brings them back to where they were in college. It makes them feel really good.
Well, everybody probably remembers the old German restaurants, the old German, the Heidelberg, Metzger's. Actually, Ann Arbor was settled by a large group of German settlers, and originally the restaurants were mostly German. How many of you are familiar, rather, with the Heidelberg and Metzger's, the old German? I think there were a few others, but we both love this great album cover of the Barons of the Heidelberg. These guys in lederhosen.
They're rocking those lederhosen.
Oh, baby, and. But, of course, the Heidelberg is still there, and Metzger's is still in Ann Arbor, though it's moved out of the downtown area. It's down on Zeeb Road, I think. And they just reopened the old German underneath the Grizzly Peak. So they're still around. If you got a taste for Wiener Schnitzel or whatever, it's where to go. How many of you know Argiro's? Okay, the reason we included this, because not only has it been around for a great deal of time, but this is a great reuse of architecture of an original building. This was actually, and this is so Ann Arbor, this was a cooperative gas station from the Great Depression. And they've been in there, I think they've added to it since then. But if you look at pictures from the 30s, you'll see people getting gas in front of this, what later became Argiro's.
We also put an Afternoon Delight, Tom Hackett's place. It's been around since the 70s. He's so happy to still be in business, serving a third generation of people. And the first place in Ann Arbor to have a salad bar.
Everybody knows the Gandy Dancer, whether it was for a special occasion or just going to a Chuck Muir's for crab or lobster. But everybody probably has seen so many of these great photographs of the Michigan team going off to the Rose Bowl from the old train station. This was actually built in the 1880s. And it's still a very popular place for special occasions usually, but and of course Chuck Muir is no longer around. It's part of the Landry family of.
But there's another example of people that learned at one place and start another. Mike Gibb, who's the CEO of Main Street Ventures, which are, you know, Grazzi and all those places, he and his partners all started there. They learned from Chuck Muir. They learned everything they needed to know. Then they went on to form their own restaurants. And there's a lot of great stories about the Gandy Dancer. One of my favorites is there used to be a piano player there, and when they needed to turn tables to so people would leave, he, for some reason, he would play Burn Down the Mission Walls by Elton John, and people would clear out. And so anytime he was instructed to play that, you knew it was time to turn the tables.
He later worked at the Whipple Tree, and that didn't work out so well.
And people still applaud, by the way, when trains go by. Oh, also, when they first started, the waiters and waitresses had to dress up like train engineers. The women had to wear, like, bandanas, and the men had to wear, like, those overalls, and they had to walk around looking like train engineers. Oh, the brown jug.
How many brown juggers? Come on.
It's the oldest. It's now become really the oldest continually operated restaurant, obviously, here since 1936. My uncle used to make donuts there in the 40s. It really it still has great pizza. My husband and I dated there. It's really, to us, a true Ann Arbor place. And we've heard from Susan Weinberg, the historian, that there's some danger of that block going away. So please go to the Brown Jug while you can.
Yes.
Before they put in another
high-rise.
Catch it
while you may. Gather ye brown jugs while ye may. Now, the Weber's was started by Herman Weber. He actually cut his teeth in the restaurant industry by working in the kitchen at Metzger's. And in 1937, he opened his own restaurant. And, of course, that's not in the original location anymore, but not far from there. How many of you have been to Weber's? Quite a few of you. It is still in the family. Herman Weber lived to be 101 years old. And his son, Ken, still runs the place now. Knight's was started in the early 50s, and it's still run by the family. It was started as a meat market.
Everyone goes to Knight's for meat.
That's right. And many of the restaurants in Ann Arbor get their meat from Knight's. There are now four locations. There's a kitchen out on Jackson Road for educational purposes. There's the original Knight Steakhouse. There's one on Liberty. And then there's the original meat market. And, of course, everybody loves the Cottage Inn.
Been around since the 60s, was franchised, but the original is still a lot of fun. Monahan's, we just love Mike Monahan. He started out with a seafood market inside of Real Seafood and moved to Kerrytown. He's famous for saying, even if you don't like fish, I will find a fish you like. He's just a super nice guy. Real Seafood we put in because, believe it or not, that's been there since 1975 on Main Street. And one of the interesting things we find about Real Seafood is he moved to Main Street in 1975. Now, try and imagine this. Everybody was out at the malls. All the action was out at Briarwood and all the malls. Downtown was dead. Try and imagine Main Street with no restaurants being just, and everybody thought he was crazy to put a restaurant on Main Street. Well, it's still around, still, and it's part of the Main Street Ventures, but it's interesting how Main Street has turned around.
Eggs over easy at Angelo's. That's been a mainstay of Ann Arbor for many, many years. It was started by the original Angelo, who started at Curtis's Chicken in the Rough. And he started his own restaurant. Now his son is running the place. Everybody probably has heard the song, Eggs Over Easy at Angelo's by Dick Siegel. And then there's Grazzi.
Grazzi we put up because a lot of people don't realize that it was a theater. It was the first motion picture theater in Ann Arbor, started in 1913. And John found a token from the Orpheum Theater, which the Grazzi's was. And, of course, everyone loves the incredible bacchanalia that goes on in Grazzi, the mural. Some people come in just to look at the mural. And we're ending on Zingerman's. Ari was gracious enough to write the foreword for our book. There's nothing as, we probably can't tell you anything about Zingerman's you don't already know because they do get a lot of press, but.
But it's the iconic of all iconic restaurants now. And they say probably the greatest success story of an anarchist that ever.
And John discovered an interesting fact about Ann Arbor that we're going to close with as to why Ann Arbor is so, one of the reasons Ann Arbor is so special.
Well, you know, if you go out and you search on Ann Arbor through the website by Rand McNally, you will find that there's only one place in the entire world called Ann Arbor. And there's very few cities you can actually name like that. I don't care how odd you think
the name is. There's only one Ann Arbor.
There's only one Ann Arbor.
And it's full of great food and great memories, and we hope this stimulated some. We hope you'll share our stories with us. We had such a great time researching this and talking about it, meeting the great owners, and we really appreciate you listening to us, so thank you.
Thanks, guys.
John, oh, what a great presentation. We'll take questions, but I got to fire a few at you first.
Okay.
Was there one main repository, one library on campus where you got the
bulk
of these
images?
It's,
no, well, we had to go to a lot of places, but let's celebrate Pack Rats, because two of the women that helped us with this book, Susan Weinberg, and are you guys familiar, Jan Langone? She's an Ann Arbor person. She has the largest collection of cookbooks and restaurant memorabilia possibly in the world. People come from all over the world to look at her collection. She has a collection at the Graduate Hatcher Graduate Library, and she allowed us to peruse, but literally she would throw menus and pictures in a cardboard box and seal it. So it was like going through a time capsule, the same thing Susan Weinberg has one at the Bentley Historical Library. So we spent hours just going through all these menus and looking at stuff. Thank God for Pack Rats, because how else do you know how people live during a certain time? It's a wonderful thing.
A lot of these, too, came from photographers that were working in Ann Arbor, the Ivory Photo Labs. A lot of those photos you just saw that are from the vintage periods were from Ivory Photo. Those are at the Bentley, the Clements Library.
And, of course, the wonderful Ann Arbor Library. We did a lot of research.
This library had many of the ads you saw. Okay, so
the old observers we'd look through.
We spent days and hours and months going through everything. Yeah, salivating.
How much time overall did you spend working on the
book? Well, it took us a good year to do this. and fortunately, you know, Arcadia allowed us to do what we wanted to do because we wanted color. You know, we've done a couple of books before this, but we weren't able to use color. And this time I think it was very important to have color. It's food, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
The introduction from Ari is so fascinating. At the beginning, he says that he wasn't all that much interested in food when he first was here at Ann Arbor. He said he was interested in getting by and getting with another word that rhymed with by, getting high. And it wasn't a foodie at all. I thought that was pretty fascinating.
But also a lot of people, when they were students, couldn't afford to go to these restaurants. And we found that people have told us now they can go to the restaurants they wanted to go to, but they couldn't afford when they were students. Now they can afford the ones that are still open. They can afford to eat there.
Incidentally, his partner, Paul Saginaw, reminisced that they used to get high in the Martian Ballroom above Drake. So, But it is important to note that when you do a book like this, you have to have permission to use the photographs, or you could, or take them yourself. We did both because you have no choice, and Arcadia demands there be a photograph or an ad or something to go with each of these particular restaurants. So, you know, you can't just go out on the internet and say, well, there's a picture of Drake's. I'm going to capture that and I'm going to print it. First of all, it won't be the right resolution anyway. It's got to be huge. You know, the resolution has to be huge.
Okay.
But you have to have permission for that. So, and that's why we use these libraries. Anybody else?
Any questions? Raise your hand. So I'm going to come around with a mic. We're just going to start over here.
Ask us anything, two gentlemen, seriously.
So hang on.
Yeah, I came in about a half hour late. Maybe you've covered this restaurant. Actually, I have a two-part question.
Okay.
First part of which, one of my favorite restaurants was Maud's, right across from this library. Went out of business maybe 6 years ago. And why do all my favorite restaurants go out of business in this town?
That is, I wish I could answer that. We did talk about Maud's, and we talked about their martini salad, and how the people from Zingerman's actually met at Maud's and went on to, it was a place, actually, we found out it was called the Golden Falcon before. It was some kind of dive bar before it became Maud's.
It always seemed like it was pretty crowded when I was there.
That's a very complicated question to answer, but... It has a lot to do with, you know, the price per square foot and the amount of profit margin and the fact that these franchises, they can come in and they can get things a lot more cheaply because they're compensating with other locations and they're balancing how much they're making.
This is a real problem with Ann Arbor. You know, we were told by the people from Le Dog and Jerusalem Garden that it's anywhere from $48 to $60 a square foot on Main Street now.
Right.
And as he said, they said it's New York prices. So you have a crappy Life is Good store that you have like in Traverse City come on Main Street in Ann Arbor. That's not Ann Arbor. Peaceable Kingdom is Ann Arbor. Le Dog is Ann Arbor, not the franchises. But unfortunately, places like even Shinola, they can afford to pay these expensive rents.
Right.
And we're losing the character of Ann Arbor. I look at a place like Frank's, which to me is such a jewel on Maynard.
Yeah.
And I wonder, how long is Frank's going to be there? Because it is such an old school kind of place. And right. That's why we wrote that book. We want to preserve these memories for people before they're all gone.
Right. And they are fading.
And we...
I know. Right. We're just... Yeah, this is... We wrote about Ann Arbor. We can tackle the other places.
And we have
later.
A question right over here.
Okay.
Okay. So the first thing is, I'm trying to remember the first restaurant I ate at in Ann Arbor in 1974. It was a crepe restaurant where Prickly Pear is now. Does anybody remember the name?
Oh, was that Shea? It wasn't Shea Crepe. It was
Shea Crepe. Yeah.
What was it called? Shea Helen.
Shea Helen. Oh, okay.
Oh.
I don't know that. That was the white spot.
It had red and white tablecloths. I mean, it was very, traditional.
See, I remember the Central Cafe. Do you remember the Central Cafe
with
amazing Huevos Rancheros? I think that was in the same location, too.
It was next door. It was in the place that was then Middle Kingdom.
Is
now a Greek place.
The Greek place, yeah.
So the places I wanted to ask about are the set of restaurants that have been in the Bell Tower Hotel. The stage.
The cursed Bell Tower Hotel.
Yeah, he just flooded.
The stage door.
Escoffier.
The stage door.
And Escoffier. Do you have any background on those?
Well, Escoffier was originally on State Street, and then it moved around the corner to the Bell Tower. And the guy that ran that Terry McClement, he actually is involved with the Out Bar now. He's one of the people there. And for some reason, that's a very doomed location. We found out it's because it doesn't have a lot of foot traffic. When there's a concert going on at Hill, you see that restaurant. But otherwise, you're just walking by on North U, and you don't see it. Unfortunately, Eve, which is in there now, has closed. I don't know if you know that, but that Eve has closed, unfortunately.
Freedom is closed because I know they had a bad flood.
They had a flood, and then they, but now it is,
really?
Unfortunately, I found out from a friend of mine that
Eve, there's a family.
It's a very difficult location, and here was the other problem with that. They have to be the room service for the hotel, and that's a whole other set of problems. Eve had to take on room service at the Bell Tower Hotel, and I think it was just too much for her. Fortunately, Frida Batito's still survives, but I think that's a cursed location. Nothing has been able to survive in there. It was also the Earl Uptown, remember?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, we have
This gentleman has a question.
A question over here. I'm going to just run right over here. And I'm going to go. There was a gentleman on this end here. So.
Hi. Is there something special about Ann Arbor and its restaurants other than being a college town? Because I've only lived here 10 years, but it seems like there's a lot more restaurants than you would think, even for a college town. So did anything in your research indicate why Ann Arbor may be a little bit more special?
Well, again, that's a kind of a complicated question, but even though the university started with that quadrant setup, the way you still see the Michigan State like that, it expanded beyond that, and there was a city already of Ann Arbor, so you've got both entities, and then you've got Pittsfield Township, and it extends all the way to Ypsilanti, and so the population is very, very large for a number of reasons, not just the university, so you get a lot of restaurants kind of catering to many different tastes, and the fact that downtown Ann Arbor is isolated as opposed to like the area around Briarwood, it keeps out a lot of those franchises, and a lot of these independents are able to thrive.
There's a great little quote from Ari that talks exactly what you're talking about. I'm just going to paraphrase it. It's in his introduction, but he says, in the food world today, we talk a lot about what the French call terroir. Terroir, if I'm pronouncing it. It's a reference to the influence of the location, soil, and climate all play in the flavor of the food that grows in it. And he talks about, he likes to think of Ann Arbor the same way. There's a terroir here that influences restaurants. He said they're a product of their environment. At the same time, the environment is better for them being in it. And he talks about that the restaurants in Ann Arbor, they could only happen in the terroir of Ann Arbor. There's something about it here that makes these restaurants special. And he writes a little bit more about that. So it's a great question.
And we have a gentleman right here.
Oh, I just wanted to add another comment about Escoffier. One of the things that happened also was, if you remember, Hill Auditorium went through a major renovation and closed. And so there were they didn't have the traffic coming from even the people attending concerts and so forth. So it just became untenable.
Thank you. Two questions. Going back in time, any research or discovery about Leo Pings?
Leo Pings is in this book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was
as
one of the first
As a young
Chinese...
child, I used to be dragged there by my parents to learn how to eat.
Oh, my God, me too. When I was little, we have our family cottage out near Whitmore Lake, and we had a neighbor that worked at Leo Pings, so we were always had to go, the worst Chinese food ever. But it was the only Chinese food ever. And it's so funny you remember that. So we had it's in the book. We had thank you for bringing up Leo Pings.
The other one was the Sugar Bowl that was on Main Street.
Yes. That's a very iconic restaurant.
The Sugar Bowl was opened about 1919, and when it finally closed, Le Sen is what actually materialized there over on Main.
That was a Greek restaurant. That was, you know, there's a great Greek tradition of restaurants, and that was, and also sold candy. A lot of people remember the Sugar Bowl. That was, and as John said, it was Le Sen, and then briefly it was a place called Lulu's Storyville Saloon, another restaurant started by 8 people who had never owned a restaurant before. There was an ad guy and a music guy, and it was a place to play music, and that only lasted 6 months, but they were in that same location on Main Street.
That same recipe for disaster. We know nothing about the restaurant industry.
What's there now?
It's the building's gone. And it's where PNC Bank is, replaced it. But the building isn't actually there. But it's just so funny that a restaurant run by 9 people who didn't know how to run a restaurant was replaced by 8 people who didn't know how to run a restaurant.
Yeah.
It didn't last either. But it's a blip in Ann Arbor history.
It's such a difficult business. In fact, the fellow at...
Jerusalem Garden,
who's been in that business for like almost 35 years, he said, you know, it's just such a difficult business, you know.
My last question, real. It's something I've noticed in the last 3 or 4 years in Ann Arbor that was different than when I was in school and being poor and struggling. Mm-hmm. But you go into a restaurant now and there are all these undergraduates there with plastic. And there are large groups and they are eating and drinking. I'm thinking, great for the restaurants, but this is just an amazing phenomenon. Have you noticed that?
Yes, and we're sort of shocked by it, but it also goes hand in hand. We're seeing all these high-rises that have replaced. Do you notice all these high-rise luxury places? These kids can afford to stay in there. Their parents are letting them. You know, where's the great tradition of living in a crappy house where the stairs are falling down in Ann Arbor? This is a tradition. But seriously, and it's a communal house, and you write your name on the eggs. Otherwise, someone's going to steal it. These high-rises are bland as a chain restaurant. These kids are living in these high-rises. I know I sound like an old person. These kids today, but it's true. And you see them eating. I mean, when I pointed out it was a huge treat to go to the Parthenon, my God, when we could scrape together enough money to go to the Parthenon, it was a big event. Right. So you're right. I find that a sort of a startling, yes, thank you. You pointed out some excellent things. You let me rant a little, sorry. Oh,
someone, we have a question right over here.
It's not exactly a question. It's just DeLong's Barbecue. And I think this is kind of amusing. Mr. DeLong is not Mr. DeLong. He's Mr. Thomas. And he was called DeLong in high school because he was such a tall, skinny kid who played basketball.
Wow, thank you.
And they called him DeLong Kid.
Thank you. Because we love to hear stuff from people. And whenever we give talks, we tell people stuff like that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
We found out about that thing about the Rubaiyat when we were speaking at Nicholas. Someone told us the whole story about Wine by the Glass. We didn't know that in our research. And now we're telling other people about that. Right. So thank you.
Another thing we learned is that you couldn't buy hard liquor anywhere in Ann Arbor in a restaurant until 1960, which is pretty late.
Beer and wine, though, right?
Beer and wine, but nowhere could you get hard liquor in a restaurant in Ann Arbor until 1960.
Oh, I'm going to go back. We have another gentleman over here again. I'm going to go right back.
Thank you for the memories. Well, when you mentioned that comment about hard liquor, there used to be something called the City Club.
Right.
Was it a private club? Was that because of the...
Right, right. You'd have to be a club member to get that, I think.
And that was right down...
That burned down to the ground. That was run by Mike Cabot, who now runs Hobbs. And
Hobbs is another great restaurant. If you've been there in Ipsy, that's an old school, old time, wonderful, wonderful restaurant. And speaking of liquor, we did put the drive-through beer depot in there. We know you can no longer drive through, but man, oh man, how cool was the back when you could drive through and they just put a case of beer in your car?
You can drive through, but.
Okay, anyone else? Someone else?
You You will be given a breathalyzer.
Any plans on your next book?
You know what's funny? People say, are you going to do iconic restaurants of East Lansing? No.
No.
Not that East Lansing doesn't have some ancient, but it's interesting. We were discussing this with Martin. It's like East Lansing has some very good restaurants, but it doesn't seem to have that same tradition. You know, it's funny, when you live in Ann Arbor, you don't realize how great you have it until you leave Ann Arbor. It is like a bubble, a beautiful bubble that has all these wonderful places. And then when you look back, you're like, you know, because we heard that there are 600,000 alumni of the University of Michigan, and we want to sell a book to every one of them, actually.
Right,
but
exactly.
We just feel like, you know, it's more than, look, even if you didn't go to Ann Arbor, even if you didn't go to U of M, you're still a part of this, important part of this town. You're still an important part of having these memories. And it's just wonderful that there is a place like Ann Arbor that has so many of these incredible stories.
Right. And we, yes.
Oh, hang on just a moment.
So if your next book were to be a continuation, what are the iconic restaurants that you would think would survive now that we would look back 20 or 30 years from now, if any?
Oh.
Well, one of the new restaurants that I think is really interesting is Spencer. Have any of you been there? It's a really interesting place. The food is very, very good there. I think Frito Batito's could be an iconic restaurant. I think some of those restaurants along Main Street, but I think we'd still have to do a little more research on, because it's surprising sometimes what will close. I don't know if any of you remember, like, the Full Moon and all those Andy Gulvezin restaurants.
Yeah.
Those are in there. We wish we had time to talk about
right.
that. He'd open and close a lot of different restaurants, but it's hard to predict what's going to be iconic because it's so shocking when there's a restaurant, like that restaurant Vellum, that got incredible press, yeah. incredible notoriety, and that closed within a year.
Right.
So
it's
hard to tell what's really going to survive for us. We each have our favorites. And we love to have people tell us, well, this should be in the book.
Right.
And maybe if there's enough of those, we'll do a sequel right. to this if there's more restaurants.
Yeah.
So we'd love to have your input as well.
Yeah, there's that Slurping Turtle, which is interesting. And
sure.
what's that sushi place on State Street? It's, I can't think of the name of it, but. Yes, Totoro. Yes, yes, yes. So, you know,
pretty.
If it, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So if. If it remains, you know, it just depends. But anything else?
Question? Anyone?
Any food? Oh, yes.
Okay, wait.
Sir.
Who had a question? Just raise your hand. I'll come over.
Mark.
Okay.
I'm calling him out by name.
All right.
No, I'm just hoping there's enough snow this year to somebody will make a grizzly or a bear
yeah.
in front of the brick edifice that used to be Crazy Jim's.
Oh,
that's a great memory.
Snow bears in front of Crazy Jim's.
Yeah.
You need to have the bear.
We should have had that in the. Do we have that in the book?
No, we don't.
No.
Yeah, it was difficult to get some of the old Crazy Jim's in there too. That took a while. That's another problem is if it's a restaurant that's not that old. It's hard to find a photo of it, you know, because it's like it's not now and it's not 1940. It's
how
like.
How long were those bears? I don't know how long when that started, but maybe.
No, it's a great tradition. I'd love to find that out. They're hard to get a hold of at Crazy Jim's. They're not incredibly talkative.
Yeah.
They're a little secretive.
What's
Pardon?
That?
Some of the employees made
know.
The bears.
Yeah, yeah.
They would have it. They would go out at night and make those, so in the morning you would see the bear.
One of the things we do here at the library is we have podcasts with local personalities, and Matt was just telling me that after the closing of Crazy Jim's, we did a podcast, so you can see that on our website with the owner.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Is that so when they were doing their Kickstarter campaign?
Hang on just a moment. Matt, use the mic.
Okay, fair enough. I have to follow the rules, too. So a few years ago when Crazy Jim's had to relocate and they weren't sure where they were going to end up, we had a chance to talk with the owner. And we did an interview, and that's available on our website at aadl.org/podcasts. You'll be able to hear an interview with the owner. Thanks so much.
Good. And we will want to leave time for the book signing, because we will be having a book signing here. So
we'd love to.
John, you got to mention, besides the two books that you've done together, you've done two separately, John.
Oh,
well, talk
thank
these
you,
up.
Martin. Yeah, between us, you know, before I knew Gail, I wrote Detroit Ragtime in the Jazz Age, and I do a lot of lectures on this book. I don't know if many of you know this, but Detroit played a very large part in the development of ragtime music and early jazz music. And a lot of the most famous jazz musicians started in Detroit. Before we did Grand River, I traced Michigan Avenue from Detroit to Chicago. It's not a journey I recommend once you get past the New Buffalo, but I shouldn't say that. It's not a journey I recommend once you get past the Indiana sand dunes, because then you're getting shifted in many different directions. But thank you. Yeah, these are also available, and that's a great travelogue. Really, you can see what was there and what's there now, just like Grand River is. Thank you, Warren.
Yeah. Final
question from anybody? We good? All right. Gail and John would love to meet you. Their book's available.
Can I ask one last thing?
Yeah,
if you have any food memories to share, that's what I forgot to tell you. You don't have to belong to Facebook. We have a Facebook page, facebook.com. It's called Ann Arbor Restaurants or Iconic Ann Arbor Restaurants. Go to that page and leave food memories. We also have an email, iconicannarbor@gmail.com. And I have business cards out there. You can take one of the cards. Feel free to just write us and share your memories. But go on our Ann Arbor Restaurants Facebook page, because we love to hear stories. So thank you.
Thanks for being here, Gail. John, thank you for coming.
Okay, we'll go out and
we'll do the book signing up front. Go on up.
Thank you.
Grab some books.
Thank you.